Looking for a show that promotes compassionate living with respect for all beings on Earth?
Animal Voices is Vancouver's and Western Canada's only animal advocacy and vegan radio program,
bringing you all the animal and vegan-related news, events, interviews, lifestyle, and commentary you need to keep up to date on what's happening both locally and internationally.
We at Animal Voices encourage the movement toward a world in which animals are treated with compassion and mercy.
So please do tune in every Friday from noon to 1 p.m. on 100.5 FM and remember to be kind to the animals.
Welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show, Western Canada's only radio program on animal advocacy and compassionate living. This is 100.5 FM Co-op Radio, CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today's Friday, July 7th, 2018, and a beautiful day in Vancouver. I'm your host, Carol Davies McIntosh, and I'm joined today by our control room operator, Jody Pongratz.
Hello.
Hello. Thanks for stepping in at last minute, Jody. It's great.
We're all here for each other.
That's great.
Allison's covering me next week, too, so.
There you go.
There's cooperation for you.
That's cooperation, the word. The actual word in practice. On today's show, Jillian Walters is going to be interviewing Mary Kay Fain, who is a grassroots organizer and founder of Liberation Philadelphia. Liberation Philadelphia focuses on direct action to tactics to bring the issue of animal rights to the forefront. And she's also a board member in a newer organization called Species Revolution, which is interesting. Check out their website to see what it's all about. And she's also going to talk about her journey from being an animal lab researcher when she was doing an advanced degree to becoming an animal activist. So stay tuned for that coming up at 12:30. But first, here's a message from King Zoom, the vegan kid.
Hi, it's King Zoom, the vegan kid. Why I decided not to shop on Amazon. I love ordering books on Amazon and receiving them in the mail. I bet you do too. But I recently decided not to shop at Amazon.com anymore because I found out some disturbing facts that hurt the animals and me, of course. I'm going to share them with you today. I found out that anyone can order fur coats on Amazon.com. Some of these furs, hundreds of chinchillas are killed just to make one fur coat. I saw some undercover footage of how these sweet animals are killed and I felt really sad. Amazon.com also sells cockfighting gear, even though cockfighting is illegal in Canada and the U.S. You can also order foie gras, which is the fattened liver of force-fed ducks and geese, even though it is illegal in many places. Did you know that Amazon CEO founder Jeff Bezos is the richest man on the planet and in the world? Environmentally and animal waste groups have reached out to this massive company with concerns, but Amazon.com has ignored them. Lastly, Amazon recently purchased Whole Foods for nearly $14 billion. This company is now shipping animal products right to people's doorstep. It's called Amazon Fresh. So you decide. Is this a company that aligns with your values?
Thanks, King Zoom, for that. It's, you know, it's the expression, "let and the little child shall lead you," comes to my mind. King isn't so little anymore, but he is doing some leading. It's a good job.
Yeah, he's certainly paving the way. I met him. He's so nice.
We're going to play you a little trailer called for a film called Invisible Vegan, and this is a trailer that addresses the film addresses the myth that vegan is a white thing. Talks about how African Americans have a long history of veganism. So listen to it now. See what you think.
The modern day slave doesn't know that it is a slave.
The food be thy medicine, medicine be thy food.
The government encouraging people to eat foods that it knew would make them sick because of the lobbying efforts of the industry. And that's really reprehensible.
I grew up in D.C. eating the standard American diet. I initially identified veganism as a white thing. It was because I didn't know my history. All I knew was we turned scraps into soul food, and I thought that was our only culinary legacy.
Fried fish, fried pork chops, fried chicken.
It becomes soul specifically assigned to black people because in the 60s, black nationalists wanted to make the argument that black people had culture. We have culture in our language, we have culture in our clothing, we have culture in our food.
Chitlins and chicken wings and oxtail. And ox tongue and pig feet. Those were the things that were thrown away that massa didn't eat. Those were the scraps that were scavenged up by certain slaves.
They made do with what they had, but the fact is that we are no longer on the plantation.
It's all love, all love.
Something a lot of people think about black folks' history in this country, it always like starts with slavery, right? But it really goes back farther than that to the continent of Africa. People were growing food, cultivating the land.
They had crops, they had dirt, and they had seeds. So I can only imagine that most of our diet was always plant-based.
When you look at traditional West African diets, they are diets that are low in fat.
The World Health Organization finally admitted that meat was the leading cause of cancer. Kaiser Permanente is finally endorsing a plant-based diet for optimum health. So eating fresh, healthy crops is a part of our legacy, and it's a part that we should start embracing.
I don't eat no meat, no dairy, no sweets, only ripe vegetables, fresh fruit and whole wheat. I'm from the old school, my household smell like soul food, bruh. Curry falafel, barbecue tofu, no fish.
You have systemic inequality, people who are being beaten down by the detritus of life.
Access to healthy foods in this country has become a privilege instead of a right, which it should be. Cost is a big barrier for probably a lot of people.
The federal government gives subsidies for big food to produce cheap food. So that means that it's going to be cheaper for us to get boxed macaroni and cheese or white bread.
No human is really adapted to eat this way. This diet will cause increased rates of disease and death in us because we are less genetically adapted to eat these foods.
A lot of people will find like the foods that they eat really disturbs their rest. These are things that can give you mucus at night. I'm going to sleep out. Oh, we wake up. Well, you take some of that dairy out of your diet, you won't do that.
By not drinking that milk, by not eating any animal products, you are not participating in a system that causes harm. Vegans are in a position to be able to recognize the suffering of these other beings.
There's no way I'm eating that. There's dead and diseased animals mixed in with the lab ones.
They are not feeding our children. We are feeding our children.
There's the policy side of our health and our wellness, and there's the personal priority side.
As a people, if we want to grow stronger and flourish, we have to be healthy.
A plant-based diet promotes better health, less disease, and greater longevity. You need a clear mind. And to have that, you need a better diet.
Just try to have a little bit more strategy about what it is you eat. And if you can do that, then you can find that you can stay steady about a number of things as far as discipline goes.
Power of psychology. You change your perception.
No meat, no dairy.
If you change your perspective,
right vegetables, fresh
then you see new opportunities.
The moral of the story to hold on to is our genius and our innovativeness.
We live in this big mass production society where you just don't know where the food comes from, to be honest.
We need more people that look like us pushing that message.
Thank you.
We need more visibility to a lifestyle that is far too invisible in certain communities. I don't want to be an invisible vegan.
Wow, that sounds like an awesome film. I'm not sure where it's playing or when yet, but we're going to put that on our Facebook page as soon as we find out.
I'm going to see it for sure. Yeah. It sounds awesome.
It is. It does sound awesome. I was actually in Africa a couple of years ago for about a month, and eating as a vegan, every place I went, I had to ask for vegan food, and they said, hey, no problem, we'll just make you African food.
Wow.
So they're beautiful beans and grains and porridge things that they made, incredible salads. And the rest of the guests ate the North American food that they had prepared for them, but I think I ate like a queen.
Yeah. People aren't willing to go outside their comfort bubbles, are they?
Yeah.
Especially tourists, like in these touristy areas. Yeah.
Yeah.
I experienced that in Cancun, Mexico as well.
Yeah.
It's like, is there any Tex-Mex instead of like authentic?
Real.
Like, why are you even here?
Like, yeah. But it was, I was surprised. I thought it'd be hard to eat like a vegan there, but no, not at all. Like they don't eat a lot of meat at all, even the ones that do eat some.
What part of Africa did you go to?
I was in Tanzania for most of the time, but I was also in South Africa.
Oh.
But I'm looking forward to going back.
Mm-hmm. There's a dream. It's on my bucket list.
Yeah. So speaking of Africa, South Africa... Yay, Lions. It was the Lions against the poachers, and the Lions won. Some poachers broke in to a game reserve in South Africa to hunt rhinos. The poachers illegally entered, and they had a gun. They had a high-powered rifle with a silencer, an axe, wire cutters, so they'd cut through, because all of the reserves, game reserves in South Africa are fenced. As huge as they are, they're all fenced with sort of a chain link fencing. And these poachers broke in and had food supplies for a few days and stuff. Well, I guess the lion pride decided they look like a good snack.
Oh.
And they actually found human remains, so they had been eaten. Now, this is, it's a huge problem in South Africa. They have, when you go into the parks there, they check your trunk for weapons and all that kind of stuff there. They're really trying to keep the poachers out, but unfortunately, poachers killed in 2017. Poachers killed 1,028 rhinos in South Africa, compared to 13 rhinos in 2007. So that's a huge increase, and it might have something to do with the fact that South Africa's constitutional court overturned the government's blanket ban on selling horns from the endangered animals in 2017. So that's increased the market.
This goes to show how legislation can support like such a negative event, act. Like,
exactly.
Oh man, it's horrible to hear.
And moving over to India, which has much better news for the animals, the Indian court in a northern province, I'm going to try to say the name, Uttarakhand. It's a northern province in India. And the court has just ruled that all animals should enjoy the same rights as human beings, saying that they have distinct personas with corresponding rights, duties, and liabilities of a living person. So they have named the entire animal kingdom, including birds and fish, as legal entities. So they've also indentured the citizens, saying that all the citizens throughout the state are hereby declared persons in loco parentis, which means like absent parent or something like that, that they are responsible as a parent, as a human face for the welfare and protection of animals. So they're asking their citizens to make sure that the regulations about animal welfare are upheld. It banned the use of spikes and other sharp instruments on farm animals, and also had a bracket to the temperatures that people could keep animals in harnesses. So, pretty impressive.
Yes, sorry, that was the politicians in charge of
in a province in India, in northern province in India. So
there's good leaders and bad leaders.
There's good stuff and bad stuff going on in politics. You know,
just goes to show, like, vote right, people.
That's right. That's right. Mm-hmm. In other news, the BC SPCA has seized 16 dogs in distress from a property in Quesnel. The dogs were kept in really small crates for their size, and they were left in a poorly ventilated area with little or no access to water, and they were soaked in their own feces and urine and all matted. The thing with this is that these two people, Karen and Catherine Adams, have been previously charged and convicted of animal cruelty in 2015. So now they've done it again, you know, and
it's only 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Three.
So what, you know, how do we stop these people from, because they're breaching their conditions, and they're also, the SPCA is also recommending new charges of animal cruelty. So the dogs are out of there, and they're being kept in shelters in the region. But how do you enforce a ban on owning animals? And the SPCA says they have special constable monitoring, but they also really rely on the people living in the community that know that these people, because they do a lot of publicity around it, and they know that these people are not supposed to have animals, so they're kind of waiting for the neighbors to give them a call.
Oh, see, so, importance of community.
That's right.
Yeah, community watch dogs. Thank you.
Exactly.
That's kind of crazy, though. It's like you didn't do very great the first time. Like, what made you think you could, like, do better the second time with these animals? Like, stop.
I know. And why?
No self-accountability.
You know, just why are you having animals if you're not going to, you know, what's the point?
What is the point?
So I'm sure there's some weird psychological thing going on there.
Yeah.
Actually.
Yeah, good point.
So I just wanted to put out a reminder about hot cars. This last week we had a situation where a father left his 3 and 5-year-old children strapped into a hot car, and they were rescued. And there are many, many dogs left in hot cars. I've phoned a number of times and, you know, phoned the SPCA a number of times when I've seen it. But it's heartbreaking every year. I see it and I just wonder, I shake my head, you know, I wonder what people are thinking. So
that's what, that would be like what you would do is like if you saw a dog in a hot car, you call the SPCA. I wouldn't know who to call, so.
You call the SPCA.
Like the police.
When you call the SPCA, they have a 24-hour line, but if they're not open, if they're not actually there, they will refer you to the RCMP non-emergency line is what they ask you to call.
Gotcha. Yeah. And that's good. They take it so seriously.
Yeah, like and that's usually like later than 5 o'clock. They're usually open till 5, I think, every day of the week.
And if we can prevent the travesty, I mean, even the owners themselves, like, it might be a careless, like you're doing it as a friendly reminder.
Yeah.
Like, it could be like an honest, careless act, but like, how horrible would you feel if you were like, oh, shoot, my dog. Like, that would be awful. I know one guy committed suicide when people had bullied
really?
Him after. Yeah, because he felt so bad. And then people were, like, shaming him on like, cyberbullying, kind of. And he ended up killing himself for that. Yeah, like, you know, just prevent it, people.
Yeah,
don't put your dog in a hot car. Yeah.
Just leave your dog at home with lots of water and, you know, lots of space and stuff like that. And, you know, so if you see a dog in a hot car, like, don't hesitate to phone the SPCA and or the RCMP or the police in charge of the municipality or city that you're in. If you happen to get are able to get the dog out of the car, and this is a legal matter, so it's not suggested that you break the window or anything like that, but you know, if you're there and they get the police get the dog out of the car, give it water, you can wet it down, fan it, keep it in a cool, shady place, and take it to a vet as soon as possible, because it can really damage their heart and all kinds of things. So,
yeah. Yeah, that would be a travesty for sure. And you know those people, like, they don't mean to. They're like, so they'd be grateful if you save their dog, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Unless they're those women up in Quesnel, I guess.
That's right.
Like, what? I don't care.
They're like, that's right. Get those people.
Yeah.
So that, I just wanted to put that reminder out there, because I know I'm going to see it, and it drives me wild every time I run into it, because then I can't leave until something happens, yeah, you know?
And you're like, dang, my day, man, I got to save a dog.
Yeah, that's it, right? Yeah. So, and it happens all the time. So.
Yeah. Crazy.
Hey, we've got some events coming up for you. Mm-hmm. Free Korean Dogs is an organization that's in the eastern part of Canada right now, and they're trying to start an organization or build a team here of volunteers in Vancouver. And so they're having an information center information session July 7th from 2 to 4 in the meeting room at 1033 Marina Side Crescent in Vancouver. And that's near the Urban Fair in Yale Town, if you know what that is. And if you want to RSP, it's BOD, like BOD, at freekoreandogs.org. So, or you can just Google freekoreandogs.org. They are also, the same day later on, at 5 o'clock, hosting an adoption event in Vancouver. So they have five beautiful dogs up for adoption. And these dogs were rescued from a dog tonic shop in Korea that sells a drink made with dog meat and herbs.
That's disturbing.
So think about that before you eat your lunch.
Yeah. I know, it's so surreal that a lot of people, like, they, like, shun and shame, like, people that eat dog meat, but it's like...
I know.
But you eat cows, like people don't really see the correlation.
Not at all.
No.
Not at all.
It's just as disturbing, people.
It's amazing. Yeah, people take their dogs and go to... And you know, they go to parks and with their dogs, and then they have a pig roast, and it just seems...
Yeah.
The
disconnected. Yeah, for sure.
So that's on also July 7th at 5 to 8 at the Great Dane Coffee Shop, 6011 Walter Gage Road in Vancouver. So go, you know, so check that out. Now, also, Vancouver Island Vegan Association is presenting Vegtoria. I guess it's Vegtoria. Vegtoria.
That sounds smoother.
Smoother. So they're going to have amazing vegan food, entertainment, talks, apparel, services, community, and just they want to have it bigger than they did last year. So check out their website. It's www.vegtoria, so VEGTORIA.ca. And they are actually going to have our very own King Zoom, the vegan kid, do a 10-minute talk. he's talking on being the change you wish to see in the world. So that should be pretty good.
Aww.
So that's Saturday, July 21st, 11 to 6 p.m., and it's at the Centennial Square in Victoria, which is wheelchair accessible.
Nice.
Yeah. Now... all of you vegans out there that have been dying for one of those vegan tattoos, Thursday, July 19th, a tattoo artist, Terry O, of Goldstream Tattoo, is turning the big 4-0. So in order to celebrate his big day, he's doing vegan tattoos for a minimum donation of $100. So this is the tattoo. This is like the vegan logo, like the V that sort of has the leaf on one side. That little one.
And I want it.
You want it?
I want it.
Okay. Get over to Victoria. So this is in Goldstream Avenue in Langford Station, BC. So that's just, I think, west of Victoria. But you can get in touch with him through Goldstream Tattoo. That's how you would check that out. And I'm not sure if you have to make an appointment or what. I didn't say that, but it sounds like it's going to be pretty cool. So also coming up, we've got some a little demonstrations. Anonymous for the Voices is putting a Cube of Truth on Wednesday, July 11th, 6:30 at English Bay, and they're meeting next to the Cactus Club. So if you're interested in volunteering, you can Google Anonymous for the Voices, the Cube of Truth, on Vancouver Facebook and find out the further information. It's a really powerful educational outreach. I've done it a few times, and you can either be if you're really shy, you can put the mask on and you stand there with your other people and you don't say anything, and so you're just being a conduit for the information that's being shown on screens. Or if you're more interested in chatting with people, you can do the walk around piece and chat with people and give them more information and see if they have any questions and that sort of thing. So it's a really, cool. It's a very calm demonstration. And I think it's a good approach because it educates people. People don't know.
People don't know.
They don't know what's going on, right?
So we're here to tell them.
Yeah. So, and then there's Direct Action Everywhere Vancouver is going out to the Rifle Bird Sanctuary in Delta on July 14th at 10 o'clock. And they're going to be helping, doing some gardening, cleaning debris and branches, and just straightening things up out there, probably seeing the birds and feeding them nice little treats of seeds and nuts and stuff like that. And they're going to have a lunch. So they're asking you to bring a vegan dish to share. And, you know, it's nice, I think, as a aspect of activism to be able to help and provide support for the animals directly, and also to help the human animals that are taking care of the other animals, right?
Yeah,
and just give
nice.
Them a helping hand. So,
aww.
Yeah, so that's something to do, and it's kind of fun, and it's not confrontational at all.
Nice.
Except if the bird doesn't, except if you don't give them enough treats, then they might be a little bit.
That's it.
So, should we, where are we here? Yeah, we're done with the events.
Oh, it sounds like some great stuff happening, actually. I think next is the Mary-Kate Fain interview.
Right. On today's show, Jillian is going to interview Mary-Kate Fain. I think you can just play it. It's got an intro involved.
You got it.
Mary-Kate Fain is a grassroots organizer and co-founder of Liberation Philadelphia, which focuses on direct action tactics to bring the issue of animal rights to the forefront. She is also a board member of Species Revolution, co-founder of Candle Waster Web Collective, and operates a micro-sanctuary. Hi, Mary-Kate. Welcome to Animal Voices Radio.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me.
Why don't we start by having you tell our listeners about your vegan journey?
Sure. So I went vegan about 3 years ago after being vegetarian for 2 years. Initially, I went vegetarian after seeing a slaughterhouse video. And then I went vegan about 2 years later after reading an article titled, "You Can't Be a Feminist and Consume Dairy," which I was ready to hate read and tear apart on Twitter. But it totally convinced me. And by the end of it, I was like, well, I guess I'm vegan. And then shortly after, I became an activist.
Yeah, that's a good one to read. Can you tell our listeners?
Yeah.
Can you tell our listeners about your experience as an undergrad in a research program and how that affected your life as an activist?
Yeah. So I was studying neuroscience at Ithaca College, and I was really passionate about the work that I was doing, and I really wanted to get ahead in my field. And for those who are familiar with those fields, really research is the primary thing that you need to do in order to get into grad school. And I was very fortunate that I had a professor sort of take me under her wing and offer me a position working in her lab. What I didn't realize at the time was that I was going to become someone who abused animals in doing this. So I knew that I was working in a lab with rats, and I had had pet rats all throughout my life, And so I thought this was going to be fun. I thought that working with Rash was going to be a great way to sort of combine my love of animals with my love of science and research. And I had no idea what I was stepping into. Very quickly, I realized that the world of animal testing is not at all what it's chalked up to be, and it's not what we're told. It was really honestly traumatic, both for the rats who we were torturing and for me. I saw baby rats who were killed. I saw rats suffer and die painful deaths, and I had to be the hand that did that. Eventually, my conscience got the better of me, and I couldn't do it anymore, and I quit the study I was very close to publishing my research. It was being presented at the National Neuroscience Conference down in New Orleans, but I just couldn't do it anymore, and so I quit. I didn't realize at the time, but that was sort of the start of me becoming an animal activist. Pretty shortly after that, I teamed up with some other people who had experienced the massive abuse both of humans and non-humans in this lab, and we got the lab shut down. And that was sort of my first act of animal activism that I didn't even know what vegan was at the time, but that set me on this journey to realizing that there's more than the story that we're told.
Exactly. That's an amazing story. What a way to turn it around.
Thank you.
Can you tell us?
And now I rescue rats, and so that's sort of been like a way to find some sort of redemption is by trying to, you know, there's so many individuals who I hurt in my time there, but now I have 4 rats who I care for, and they're amazing, and I try to just give them like a wonderful life that all of the rats that I hurt deserved, and maybe some minor form of reparations there.
That's amazing. So would you call that a micro sanctuary?
Yes, I would.
Yeah, and I know when we were at the conference, there was a lot of sanctuary booths. what can you tell us about the micro sanctuary movement?
So the micro sanctuary movement is basically just that you don't need to have acres and acres of farmland in order to rescue exploited animals. So a micro sanctuary can be anything from 40 chickens in a backyard to even 1 chicken in a Brooklyn apartment. And so the micro sanctuary that I have that I run along with my roommates includes a bunny, 2 chickens, and 4 rats, as well as 3 cats who all live together. And this is sort of a way that we can bring excellent animal care standards and tell their stories into the day-to-day life of activists and to vegans, hopefully, without having to have what people perceive as a sanctuary in a traditional sense.
Yeah, that's so important for people to know and activists to know, because every activist I've ever met wants to have their own sanctuary. So this is an easy way for us to get started in that direction.
Yeah, it's definitely not sustainable for every single activist to have a large sanctuary. I mean, it's barely sustainable for large sanctuaries to operate with the really dearth of funding that they're forced to operate on. And so this is a way that, imagine if every vegan cared for even just 1 chicken. How many more chickens could we rescue? And the more the animal rights movement grows, the more people there will be to take those animals in. And this provides an alternative to work alongside big sanctuaries and rescue more animals in the long run within our means.
Exactly. So what has been some of your most memorable actions and why?
So there are a few that really resonate for me. The first being one of our most recent ones, which was called Philly Day for Animals, which was sort of a 3-part action. But the first part, we did a vigil and disruption at a rescue at a slaughterhouse. And in this action, we had about 200 people standing outside of a slaughterhouse, bearing witness to what goes on inside there and telling the public and the community that we are not okay with this. And then we had 40 people who were brave enough to go inside the slaughterhouse to bear witness and disrupt what was happening in there, and for even a few minutes shut down the operations of the slaughterhouse. And so we were really lucky to have so many people willing to take that action with us. And because we had such a large crowd in there, we were able to rescue 2 chickens from that slaughterhouse without the slaughterhouse even realizing that it had happened. And so we were able to liberate them thanks to the really brave actions of those who were doing the disruption inside. And that was just, to me, an incredible show of force, honestly, of this movement. It's a show of what we can do with numbers, and maybe one person standing outside a slaughterhouse with a sign is crazy, but 200 people is powerful. Yeah. And imagine if we could have 2,000 people, how many we could rescue, how long we could shut that slaughterhouse down for, and the message that that would send to our community. So that was definitely one of my favorite actions recently.
That's amazing. It's power in numbers.
Yeah. Another action was actually from a convergence that we had in Philadelphia in 2016, but this was a personal favorite just because it really aligns with my philosophies and belief system, was we did a disruption at the Liberty Bell. And so, as you know, we're based in Philadelphia, and the Liberty Bell is really a symbol here. But what a lot of people don't know about the history of the Liberty Bell is it's actually been a symbol of freedom and justice for multiple social justice movements beyond just American independence. The women's suffrage movement, for example, traveled around with a replica of the Liberty Bell from city to city, ringing the bell, proclaiming freedom unto all the inhabitants, which is actually what's inscribed on the bell, freedom unto all the inhabitants of the land. And you can hear that even in the language there, it's not human-centric. It's to all inhabitants. And so I feel like the Liberty Bell's message is something that we can point to and say, from the very founding of our country, this is something that is within our belief system. This is something that we morally align with as Americans. And so being able then in the city of brotherly love here in Philadelphia to go to the Liberty Bell and to talk about this to the public, that was really inspirational to me, to see people rally behind the Liberty Bell in this sort of new interpretation. And I just really loved that.
Wow, that's powerful.
Mm-hmm.
So when I came up to you after your speech at the Animal Rights Conference, I noticed you were wearing a fork, and I smiled because I had one on too. Can you tell our listeners what led you to take the Liberation Pledge?
Yes. So I have to admit, even though I'm a very strong advocate of it now, it was a hard sell for me at first. The idea is really scary, and for a lot of new activists, this sort of confrontation is not something that people are used to. For anyone who's not familiar, the Liberation Pledge is a commitment, first of all, to be vegan, of course, but second of all, to not sit where animals' bodies are being eaten. And this is a really radical idea for someone who's very used to the normal vegan pattern of just sitting around saying it's a personal choice. I totally love and respect you no matter what. You can do whatever. It doesn't bother me. And this is sort of what we're really used to, because we don't want to be that vegan. We don't want to be the preachy vegan. But eventually, I got to a point where I started to realize that the comparisons I was making in my vegan outreach arguments were not consistent with my actions. For example, I would say, did you know that a pig is as smart as a 3-year-old child, or that they are smarter than dogs? And yet, I would sit at a table where someone was eating the body of a pig, and I would never in a million years find myself sitting at a table where someone was eating the body of a toddler or a dog. This would disgust me, and this would disgust almost anyone in our culture here. And so what I realized was that I was being a hypocrite, and if I was being a hypocrite, certainly the world would see it, and my friends and family would see it, and they would realize that maybe I'm not as strong in my argument as I say I am. And I began to find that the conversation I was having were not carrying any weight, because I wasn't putting any weight behind it, because I was not acting in line with my beliefs. So then I sort of started trying out the Liberation Pledge. I was kind of a slow wader into it, just starting with friends at first, and then my workplace, and then finally moving on to family, which was the biggest beast for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I started to realize that the conversations I was having, while more confrontational, were much more effective and more powerful and were having a bigger impact. And I started to see more of the change that I wanted to have happen actually happening, rather than just talking in circles about B12 and lions have teeth or whatever.
Yeah.
Then I started to actually have conversations about who these individuals are, why it's upsetting, why it's morally inconsistent, and why I couldn't be a part of it. And I started to see actual systemic change happening within my family, my friends, and even my workplace.
That's amazing.
And I became a convert. What can I say?
Yeah. That's great for people to know. Yeah. It's so powerful. How can activists use confrontation, other than the Liberation Pledge, in a love-based, nonviolent way? Do you have any other examples?
Yes. I really do think that we can't just say confrontation for confrontation's sake, that we have to recognize what are the impacts of this confrontation. And while certainly you can be generating a social crisis, if we're working within our immediate social circles, there are consequences to this, and we need to be able to operate in a confrontational way that's still honest and respectful and nonviolent. And so I'm a very strong advocate of using nonviolent communication, especially on an individual level, because I think this word's most powerful, but even on a systemic level. So nonviolent communication is more than just not threatening people physically. Nonviolent communication really is looking at the basic needs that all humans have that drive their behavior, with the assumption that these needs are intrinsically good. For example, someone who's acting very hurtfully towards a group of people, for example, maybe that they're even discriminating against. If we look at where does this behavior come from, we can see that maybe they don't feel safe in the world. And whether or not that's an accurate assumption about their current status, all things aside, if we recognize that we all have a need for safety, then we can confront them in a way that addresses these basic needs without judgment. And I think that this is very important for communicating with people, understanding that we all have basic needs that need to be met, human and non-human. I shouldn't say human needs. We share these needs with many non-humans. And recognizing that when we can come to a place of mutual understanding on what our needs are, then we can talk in a way that isn't judgment-based, but is rather coming from a place of understanding. And so when we're confronting someone about animal rights or veganism, this can look like, rather than saying, you are wrong, you are killing animals, you are a bad person, rather recognizing perhaps they do what they do because they're trying to meet a very basic need to fit in the group. There's a reason that people want to fit in. It's because it's evolutionarily beneficial. And when people are considered part of the out-group, they are shunned and then they don't have access to resources, which puts their safety at risk. And I think a lot of this comes back to safety and very basic biological drive. So if we can sort of reframe our conversation to talk about their safety in a new way, then I think that can really change the way that they're looking at the conversation, because suddenly you're not a threat anymore. You are there to help them feel safe.
I love that idea, like looking through that lens of, yeah, the safety lens, because there's more empathy you can have for somebody if you're thinking that they don't feel safe, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Do you want to go back to negative peace? You did such a great job of describing it and telling a bit about the history.
Okay, cool. So Martin Luther King said that I have almost reached the regrettable conclusion that the Negro's great stumbling block in the stride towards freedom is not the white citizen's counselor or the Ku Klux Klanner, but the white moderate who is more devoted to order than to justice, who prefers a negative peace, which is the absence of tension, to a positive peace, which is the presence of. So I think this is something we can see a lot in the animal rights movement, is that we're very concerned with the absence of tension, mm-hmm. and we don't generally have as much concern for looking for that justice for the non-human.
Yeah, and there's many instances over, like, the history of that.
Yeah. Yes, this is something that we've seen sort of perpetuated through almost every great social justice movement. If you think about the women's suffrage movement and how there was not peace prior to women's suffrage, it was just a tension that the people in power, the men, could ignore. And really what we see throughout multiple different movements is that the oppressors have an absence of tension, but there is tension below the surface. And that when we're able to bring this tension to the surface, that's what allows us to fight for justice.
Exactly.
So I saw that you're the board member of Species Revolution, and I went on there last night, and I'm excited to go back and read some more. Can you tell us about that? What that is?
Yes, Species Revolution is a relatively new organization that I'm very excited about. They're really trying to reframe the conversation in the animal rights movement away from veganism and onto anti-speciesism. And I think this is important for multiple reasons. One, because veganism is centering humans in the fight for non-human liberation. And two, because veganism often misses the mark. It really isn't anymore the catch-all for anti-speciesism that it should be. And so when we reframe the animal rights movement from the perspective of the oppressed, of the non-humans, then we're able to have a more effective conversation that's really getting at the heart of the issue, rather than arguing about bone char and sugar. Mm-hmm. We're talking about what actual rights do these non-humans deserve and how are we going to achieve them? So Species Revolution looks at a few different major areas in which they're trying to accomplish change. One thing that they're very strong on is the language that we use as anti-speciesists. I personally have learned a lot from Amanda Hodeshell, who's one of the co-founders of Species Revolution, and she has really inspired me to restructure my language in a way that is truly recognizing non-humans for the people that they are. Even something as small as calling a non-human a person in a setting that isn't necessarily very animal-friendly is very radical.
Yes.
And you'll notice that on people's faces, they look at you funny for a second because they don't realize who you're talking about.
Yeah.
And even trying to change, you know, certain idioms that we use that continue the oppression against animals, for example, kill two birds with one stone is a really obvious one. But there are so many little parts of our language that perpetuate violence.
Yeah.
Things that I think a lot of vegans have sort of started to naturally do, like not calling pig bodies pork, mm-hmm. and not calling cow bodies beef, because mm-hmm. these words are used to mask the reality.
Yeah.
So they're very strong on language, which is something I think is really important for us as anti-speciesists and animal allies to do. They also are strong supporters of direct action tactics as well as educational tactics, which I think is something that's kind of unique for an organization. A lot of orgs out there, they're very much one or the other, and they struggle to find a marriage between the two. And anytime sort of an educational group tries to do a direct action element, it kind of seems very forced and weird, like, oh, what are you doing?
Yeah.
That's not you. And the same way around with direct action groups, who often struggle to find a good, healthy way to educate in a non-confrontational way. And so I think the Species Revolution does a really good job of marrying the two of those, looking at how can we use direct action and education as not only like two tactics, but as like looking at the marriage between those tactics. That they've also put on recently the Cleveland Animal Rights Conference, which was really amazing and unique, I think, in the way that it centered women and people of color on a speaker lineup. And in terms of the like intersectional work that they're doing, mm-hmm. I think the Species Revolution really stands out among a lot of other organizations of the animal rights movement. And I'm excited to see what happens in the future with them.
Yeah, I'm excited to follow and see what's keep up with you. So before we end, I like to ask.
You're cutting out a little. Can you repeat that?
Sorry, I was going to say I'm looking forward to keeping up with Species Revolution as well.
Yes.
Before we end, I like to ask all my guests, how do you practice self-care? What does that look like for you?
Well, for me, it's kind of just having a hobby outside of animal rights.
Yeah.
And everyone has a different hobby, but for me, I really like gardening. I'm not a big, like, fruit and veggie person, but I really like to grow beautiful plants. I have a large indoor garden that I grow, as well as a garden on my deck. And anytime I get stressed out, you can pretty much find me watering and pruning away on the deck and sort of trying to connect back to nature and beautiful things in the world. I think is really healthy. And also really just surrounding yourself with good people, I think, is so important, especially considering that so many of us are constantly fighting against, or feel like we're fighting against, our own family and friends and people who are supposed to be our closest allies. Making sure that we do have a team of close allies in our vicinity that we can count on is really important. And so I would have to give a major shout out to my partner and to my roommates and my other best friends who are doing amazing anti-speciesist work, who I can count on at the end of the day to vent with me and to laugh and cry and share all the joys and struggles of being an animal rights activist, because that community is so important.
You're right about that. It's so important because it can be isolating if you're just working on your by yourself. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us today. It was a pleasure to meet you at the conference and listen to your speech. Keep on doing what you're doing.
Thank you so much. I'm really honored that you would have me on your show, and I look forward to hearing all of what you have to say as well.
Okay. Thanks, Mary Kate.
Yeah, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
You've been listening to Animal Voices on 100.5 FM CFRO Co-op Radio in Vancouver, Canada. Please tune into our show next Friday, July 15th. To connect with us and see what we're going to show. We're having a show, but we're not sure what it's going to be yet, so it's a surprise. You can connect with us on animalvoices.org, and we're going to leave you today with a song by reggae artist Maccabee called Wa Me Eat. But before we do that, I just want to tell you about something exciting coming up. Liberation BC and Animal Voices is getting together and bringing in Earthling Ed, who has many, many videos on YouTube, if you look him up. And he's going to be screening his show called Land of Hope and Glory, and he's going to be giving a talk about it. So that's July 24th, 6:30 to 9 p.m., room C300 in UBC Robson Square. Bring your pre-vegan friends, and you'll get a chance to win prizes from a raffle. And tell them to prepare their toughest vegan-type questions. Stay tuned after this for Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith. Thanks so much for listening today to Animal Voices, and remember, be kind to all animals.
Salamata. Eyes are eyes and a vegan, we're vegan. I and I eat from the earth and leave the animals to give birth. No deaders, no fur, no feathers. When I tell people I don't eat meat, fish or dairy, then look for me strangely. Then I realize I eat a very wide variety. Listen to Maccabee. Yo, how when me eat, them I wonder when me eat. When me tell them, say me no eat no fish, nah, no meat now. How when me eat, them I wonder when me yum. When me tell them, say that I'm a vegan, man. How when me eat, them I wonder when me eat. When me tell them, say me no eat no fish, nah, no meat now. How when me eat, them I wonder when me yum. When me tell them, say that I'm a vegan. When me no eat no meat, no fish, no cheese, nah, no egg. Nothing with no foot, no eye, no wing, nah, no head. Nothing with no lip, no ears, no toe, nah, no leg. Prefer fruit and vegetables instead. Ha, me careful and me choose about what I'm eating. Me medicine, me food is me medicine. When me tell people that me no eat them, they think. They look at me and scratch them chin and start wondering. How when me eat, them I wonder when me eat. When me tell them, say me no eat no fish, nah, no meat now. How when me eat, them I wonder when me yum. When me tell them, say that I'm a vegan. How when me eat, them I wonder when me eat. When me tell them, say me